So let's take time now and learn more about the message that you did on November 24th. Kevin, first of all, give us a brief explanation about Tamar. Who was Tamar and where did she fit in?
Well, Gene, I appreciate you asking because that's an important part of this whole story. Most of us are not really familiar with Tamar, and unless you read all the way through Genesis, you would probably miss her, not know her story. The only other time we might know of her is reading in the genealogy of Jesus, and her name appears there. So we might have heard the name, but we probably don't know a lot about her. So it's a great question. Tamar was the wife of the son of Judah. Now, Judah was one of the 12 sons of Jacob.
Yes.
So this means Tamar then was the daughter-in-law of Judah and the great daughter-in-law, I guess you would say, of Jacob, of the Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob family tree. So Tamar marries Judah's oldest son, and as we mentioned in the sermon, he was evil in the sight of the Lord and was killed. We aren't given a lot of detail around that, but he dies. He is killed. So then, according to the custom of the time, Tamar, who was a Canaanite woman, by the way, that's really an important part. She was not of the same family or tribe or lineage of the Israelite family. So she then, custom of the time, would be given to the second son, so that she could have children and continue the lineage of her deceased husband. So she is given to Judah's second son, but he, according to the text, was also evil in the sight of the Lord, and so he was killed. So twice over at a very young age, Tamar is a widow. Now, the only other option for her was to go to the third son of Judah, whose name was Shelah, but according to Judah, Shelah is too young to marry. So he tells Tamar to go back home to her family, the Canaanite family, and let them take care of her, and he will contact her when Shelah is old enough to be married to her. So basically, he is responsible, Judah is responsible for her, but he doesn't want to be responsible for her, and he gives her up and forces her to go back to her family of origin and wait until he comes to tell her that his third son is old enough to get married, which he never does. He never goes, and by the time Shelah is old enough, he still has not gone to get Tamar and bring her back. So it's very clear he just wants to abandon her and get rid of her. So that's who Tamar is.
Yes. We
may have more opportunity later to talk about what she does, but that's who she is.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you gave that explanation, and it causes me to ask you this question. In the title of the message, you had titled it, Even Tamar. Now, the question is, why was even a part of the message to Tamar?
Yeah, no, that was very strategic in terms of the title, because what happens, let me continue the story, and I think the end will answer your question then.
All right.
She goes back to her family. Judah is never going to come see her. So what Tamar does is try to take control of her own life. She has been a victim all of this time, but she's tired of being a victim, so she tries to take control. She dresses up like a prostitute. She seduces her father-in-law, Judah. He does not know who she is, but she seduces him. She becomes pregnant by her father-in-law, but she gets his cloak and his staff before he leaves to go back home. 3 months later, he finds out she is pregnant. He does not know he is the father. So he says she should be put to death according to the laws of their time and their culture. But she says, fine, but I want you to know, here are the items that belong to the man who is the father of my child. And he recognizes them as his own items. He then knows, yes, that he is complicit in this entire situation. And he says at the end, which is fascinating, when he finds out he's the father and he's the one who has done this, he says, she, Tamar, is more righteous than I am because she knew that I was not coming back for her and she did this to take care of herself. He praises her righteousness. So when I was thinking about this text and what it meant for us at Thanksgiving, the idea of even Tamar became really important to me, because the overall message of the sermon was God can take the most complex, difficult, horrible situations in life and turn them for good. And when we see that Tamar, this woman who is an outcast and betrayed, does this questionable action, but is praised, and then she is even included in the lineage of Jesus, one of only four women included in the genealogy of Jesus. Even Tamar, is what I was trying to say, is included in the lineage of Jesus. So if this woman who is an outcast and performs this questionable action can be included in God's good work, all of us can be included. So I was trying to say, if God can use her and all of these difficult circumstances in her life, God can use us.
Well, that's a wonderful explanation, and I'm glad I asked that question now. So let me ask you this. Is it possible today that we can find the presence and the problems of that time in our culture and our way of living today?
Absolutely. I think, what Tamar does would still be a very questionable, difficult action, even in our time today. But we don't have the same kind of laws and punishments around this kind of behavior that they did during this period of time. She was taking a tremendous risk with what she did. She could have easily been stoned to death rather than be praised the way it ended up. So this was a tremendous risk for her. I think we see, outside of the risk part, we see people doing all kinds of questionable things for questionable reasons in our world today. Sometimes, now this is not the focus of our sermon, but sometimes maybe we look at the actions and don't think about what's behind these activities. I mean, if you just look at what Tamar did, you know, you might think very differently about her than if you know her entire story and what led to that situation. Mm-hmm. I think the same thing's probably true today, but to your question, I think certainly we see people doing the same kinds of questionable actions and behaviors that were happening in biblical times. Absolutely.
Very interesting. Well, you reminded us that God is in charge. So how and where does that fit into us, for us today?
Yeah, I think if you looked at what Tamar did, I think he would say, well, where is God in this story? That just doesn't seem that God is a part of this. And while I would certainly not want to say God was involved with the decisions that each person made along the way, that part I'm not trying to say. What I am trying to say is God can take our lives and even the bad decisions that we make in life and use those for ultimate good. In the sermon, I was even talking about other people like Peter in the New Testament and others in Scripture that we could point to and say, well, look, God can take this person and his or her difficulties and use them for God's good. Mary Magdalene, another example, right? So these are people, even beyond Tamar, who have difficult personalities, experience hardships and troubles in their lives, and we look at the situations and the end results and we think, wow, where was God in that? But in each of those situations, God takes those situations and uses them for ultimate good. And that's why I was thinking the same is true even with Tamar, right? That even in her life with the difficulties there, God takes those situations. It doesn't mean the situation itself is good. What it means is God can take that situation and use it for good. If God can take Tamar's situation and include it in the lineage of Jesus, then God can take just about any situation of our lives and use it to create good.
Wonderful, and thank you for giving us that explanation and helping us to learn more about the message, and we hope that it has been a blessing to you. God bless.
Perfect.